Hello everyone, I'm Amanda Balbi, Managing Editor at Consultant360.com. Recently, Movement is Life published a report on addressing musculoskeletal health disparities in the United States. Here to discuss with us the report is Dr. Mary O'Connor, who is the chair of the Movement is Life Caucus and is the inaugural director of the Center for Musculoskeletal Care at Yale School of Medicine and Yale New Haven Health. Thank you for speaking with us today, Dr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Amanda. Delighted to be with you and the listeners.
So let's start by talking about arthritis in America. The prevalence of arthritis among Americans is increasing. What factors have contributed to this increase?
So, Amanda, there are several factors, two that are primary drivers. One is, unfortunately, we've become a much more sedentary society, so we're not moving and taking care of our joints like we should. We know that being sedentary is a negative for your joint health because moving actually helps keep your joints in prime shape. Just from a physiological standpoint, the movement of the joint, the fluid in the joint nourishes the cartilage, which is the cushioning tissue in the joint. And so not moving is a negative. Not moving and being sedentary also contributes to us not having muscles that are as strong, and we know that strong muscles help cushion the forces on the joint that the joint surface feels. And so keeping your muscles strong and moving your joints are factors that promote joint health. The second major factor contributing to the dramatic increase in arthritis in people in this country is our obesity crisis and epidemic. So we know that added weight puts more pressure on joints, and the knee joint is particularly sensitive to this. I mean, just gaining 10 pounds of extra weight puts an additional 30 to 60 pounds of pressure on your knees. I mean, it's like phenomenal what an impact it has. So those are two primary factors.
Who is most affected by arthritis, and what role does culture play in musculoskeletal disparities?
So we know that there are certain populations of patients that are disproportionately impacted by arthritis, and those groups are women of all racial and ethnic backgrounds and individuals of color, African Americans and Hispanic Latinos. We know that joint pain is reported much higher in African Americans and Hispanics. They basically report severe joint pain at a rate nearly two times higher than Caucasians. And we know that of the estimated 43 million doctor visits each year where joint pain is the symptom and arthritis is the primary diagnosis, that 64% of those are by women. So again, women and individuals of color are disproportionately impacted by arthritis. And then in terms of culture, culture does play an important role in musculoskeletal disparities, and it's multifactorial. First, we have the question of, are patients going to the doctor for their concerns? We still have some distrust among certain communities about the medical profession, particularly in the African American community, that stems from some horrible studies that were done years ago where African American patients were basically used as research subjects without their consent. So there is some level of distrust. I hope that all of us in medicine are working hard to overcome that, because really I do believe that, you know, physicians and healthcare providers really want to help patients improve their health. There's also what I'll call more systemic issues in terms of how effectively are we creating partnerships between patients and providers. In other words, if a woman goes to a physician, particularly, you know, a male orthopedic surgeon, are her symptoms being recognized in terms of the level of severity? We're all kind of culturally biased that, you know, if a woman comes in and says she has pain in her knee that's 9 out of 10, well, is it really 9 out of 10, or is she exaggerating her symptoms? Whereas a man comes in and says he has 9 out of 10 pain, our cultural bias is that that man is more truthful in his representation of his pain and he's not exaggerating. So that really comes under the heading of unconscious bias that we all have relative to how patients are sharing information with us as healthcare providers. There's clear evidence in the literature that this unconscious bias does impact the treatment options that are recommended to patients and then their outcomes. For example, we have lots of data that highlights that women undergo knee replacement surgery at a later stage in the course of their disease, meaning their arthritis is worse, their function is poorer, their pain is worse for women compared to men at the time they have the surgery, which suggests that women are either not agreeing to surgery or they're delaying surgery. And of course, again, another multifactorial question, right? Are women delaying surgery because they are primary providers for their families in terms of being primary caregivers? They're taking care of parents and children and, you know, everybody else. Or is it that they weren't offered the operation at the same point in their disease as a man is offered? So lots of factors here. Also, it's important that we recognize that in our communities, we need to focus on the importance of movement. We need people getting out and walking or just being active in some way to improve their health. We know that obesity is more predominant for women than men, and obesity in certain racial and ethnic groups is more dominant. For example, African Americans and Hispanic Latino patients have higher rates of obesity than Caucasians. Now, the Caucasian rates are still high. I mean, there's no group here that can't improve, but we do know that those rates of obesity are disproportionately higher in certain racial and ethnic groups. I want to speak to that for one more moment because the interplay of movement and obesity and overall health is so critical. And we term this the vicious cycle. And the vicious cycle looks like this. An individual develops knee pain, and then they stop moving as much because their knee hurts. And they keep eating just the same, and then they gain weight. And then, as I've already stated, that added weight puts more pressure on their knee joint and then accelerates, basically, the cycle of my knee hurts more, I'm going to do less, I'm going to gain more weight. And so now we see the creation of a person who's obese and has knee arthritis. Unfortunately, that's not the end of the story because that person is then at much higher risk of developing diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, and what often is not appreciated well is depression. Amanda, I see these people in my practice all the time, and it's really heartbreaking to me because they come in, they have horrible knee pain, horrible knee arthritis, you know, and the question is, should they have an operation? Their surgical risk is higher because of their diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. They're depressed. And so it just makes for higher risk in terms of the outcome of surgical treatment. We spend more healthcare dollars on these individuals. Their risk of complications and readmission rates are higher. And so the key is helping that individual not be in that space, right? Not have all the joint pain, not have all the obesity and comorbidities that are associated with that by movement. Movement is the key.
So can you speak to the depression a little bit more? What social or psychological factors are involved with obesity and the vicious cycle in general?
Well, the psychological factors, I would say, are related to the compromised quality of life that these individuals sustain because they're really suffering from pain and inability to do the things that bring joy to their lives. For example, they can't go shopping, they can't go to church, they can't engage in the same social activities that they used to because they're disabled from a mobility standpoint. they have to use a cane or a walker, and they just don't feel good. So it's natural that you'd get, you know, depressed about that. And so we have to continually seek to look at individuals as the whole person that they are, and not just, you know, somebody who has a bad knee joint. Because the better we are at looking at the patient as a whole and addressing all of these issues, including depression, the more likely we are at achieving better health outcomes.
How can these barriers be overcome?
So there are unfortunately lots of barriers. There's individual barriers with simply an individual needing to recognize the importance of movement. There's barriers in terms of where they live, potentially. You know, some patients can't go outside and walk after dinner in the evening or even during the day. Maybe their neighborhoods are not safe. There's barriers in terms of them adopting healthier eating habits, because not every neighborhood has a grocery store that carries fresh produce, but they have a lot of fast food restaurants there. There's barriers in terms of individuals accessing specialty care, so they may not have access to see a knee replacement surgeon, for example, in the same time frame that someone else could. And I want to emphasize, our movement is not about patients having surgery. Our movement is about people improving their health through higher activity levels. Basically, movement is life. That's our message. That's our emphasis. When you look at these barriers, almost always there's opportunity even within the situation that that individual finds themselves in. For example, perhaps the neighborhood where you live isn't that safe. You could still get up and walk when the commercial is on during a TV show that you're watching. You could march in place. You could simply walk around the house, go up and down the stairs if you can do that, things like that. So that's an opportunity. You can work on portion control, right? You could eat just smaller sizes of what you normally eat to help address your weight. You can seek out other healthcare providers if you feel that the current doctor or, you know, nurse that you're seeing isn't taking you seriously in terms of your symptoms. So on many levels, there are barriers, and on all those levels, there are still opportunities for individuals and our healthcare system to improve.
So what are some next steps in reducing the health burden in the United States?
So we have lots of next steps. One is, again, to educate individuals on the importance of movement, to help create communities where people engage in movement, whether that's at your church or at your local YMCA, because some individuals respond better to doing activities as a group. There's opportunities for us to improve policies relative to healthcare policy. We know, for example, that in certain bundled payment approaches that we have now, that we're seeing what I call cherry picking and lemon dropping. Cherry picking being where hospitals and doctors are selecting healthier patients for surgical treatment because the cost of providing care to those patients is less, because there's less risk of complications and readmission. And patients that are sicker, meaning those patients that are exactly in that vicious cycle, those patients are being deferred. And we're saying, I'm sorry, you're too heavy, you're too obese for us to do knee replacement surgery on you right now, and you need to go lose weight. Now, Amanda, those patients know they're obese, and most of them have been struggling with their weight for years, and they feel trapped because they don't know how to get out of that cycle. And so trying to support them and provide educational opportunities for them is so important. And we have fabulous information on our website. It's called choosemovementforlife.com, choosemovementforlife.com. And on that website, we have materials that are specifically created for African-American women, Hispanic Latino women, for men as well. We also have access to our online community, which is called Health Unlocked, where people can go and share their stories and their concerns and their barriers and seek advice and feel that they're in a safe space where they can really tell their stories and get input from others who are experiencing the same kind of challenges. So we're really excited about this online community. And again, as I said, we have fabulous educational materials. In particular, we have a very engaging online education piece, which is called our journey map. And it's basically like a puzzle. And individuals can go through and put together these different puzzle pieces that educate them on different aspects of their musculoskeletal health and how they can improve. So all that information is on our website, choosemovementforlife.com, and I would really encourage our listeners to go check it out.
Absolutely. And what are some best practices in improving musculoskeletal care?
I would say the most important best practice is for each of us to embrace movement. It's simply, we should each move more. You know, get up and walk around instead of just sitting all day. Take a walk after dinner. Get up when that commercial's on TV. Simply moving more is so important for our individual health. The second is to focus on our diet and what we're eating and our weight, because again, as I mentioned, the link between what we weigh and how much pressure our joints feel is so important. Again, for every 10 pounds of weight we put on, extra weight, that's 30 to 60 extra pounds of pressure on our knee joints. The third is seek help. You know, if you're overweight, if you're having joint pain, go to your health care provider and talk about how you can improve those measures. Maybe some simple medication, non-narcotic medication, can help you get over some of your initial pain or moderate your pain so that you can start moving, because movement itself will help you with your pain. A lot of people think that if my knee hurts, I shouldn't move it, because if it hurts, I'm going to make it worse. And almost always that's incorrect. Almost always, gentle movement is going to help that joint improve, recover, and feel better. So many factors that I would say constitute best practice on both an individual level, where each of us can move more, we can embrace healthier lifestyles, and then also on, as I mentioned, provider levels, where we're really looking at patients in a more holistic way.
Absolutely. Thank you again for speaking with us today, Dr. O'Connor.
My pleasure, Amanda. Thank you so much. Thanks to the listeners.